Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. Sorry about the delay. My guest today is Jock Blokus. He is the author of a new book, Powers of the Sixth Sense, and it is believed, and I think this is his comment, it will cause many people to rethink their lives. Are you there, Jock?
I am. At last, yes, we're now connected.
That's great. I can hear you nice and clear, so that's a relief. Can I just start off by asking you, you were due to go on tour earlier this year in Canada and USA. Did that come off at all?
No, we've had to postpone it. We are actually going on tour, but with the way government bureaucracy is and red tape and getting visas done in time, it's taken longer than we expected.
I see. But you're still hoping to go sometime this year, then, I take it?
Yes, we're definitely. We're actually planning to go in June. And
Because we've
got a number of things that we need to do out there, and I got some meetings with some television people because they're going to turn the book into a TV show.
Right, that's fine. Okay. I hope that all goes off well, gets up and running, as they say. Now, you are, by definition, one of the more unusual psychics, I would think, with your background. But can we start at the beginning, where I think most people have an interest? I believe you started to realise that you were a bit different, perhaps from other people, as a youngster, when you had visits from your father, who was in spirit. Could you sort of take us into your story from there?
Yeah, well, what I'll do is I'll correct something there. My father passed in 2001, so I had visits from him then.
Oh, right, got it, I see.
But in actual fact, yes, I did experience psychic phenomena, spiritual phenomena from a very young age, especially in places like I used to go and have my holidays and spend, my uncle was a monk in a monastery.
Yeah.
And I used to go there and spend all my time there. Holidays, and I used to join spiritual groups and things, so I kind of had meditated and prayed and got involved in that side of things ever since I was a child, Mike, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing was that being brought up a Catholic, I had no idea what psychic phenomena was. I had no idea what was normal and what was supposedly abnormal to other people, so
yeah.
When I spoke about certain things that I experienced, you know, my family and other people around me just thought I had an amazing imagination.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you apparently could see and hear things that other people couldn't. I mean, what was it you actually saw? Was that other spirit children?
What I saw, the very first time of me really coming face to face, if you like, or seeing with my physical eyes, seeing objectively, was when I was young and I was staying in the monastery, and they had put me up in the attic rooms, and I had gone out of the attic. I was going downstairs to the refectory to make some tea, and I saw this priest that had actually came right out of a room, and I didn't even see if they came right out of a door, but there was a priest had come right out of this place wearing a very old type habit. And I shouted to the person that I saw, and I spoke to them, and I kind of waved and said, "Hello, Father, how you doing?" And
yeah,
he just ignored me. He just looked at me and then kind of disappeared. So I thought that this priest or this monk was very ignorant. I thought, that's pretty cheeky for a holy person to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So the next morning, I made a complaint to the rector. And I remember saying to the rector, "You know, Father, this was a, I saw this priest last night when I was going, he totally ignored me, and this is what he looked like." And the rector said to me, "Oh, nothing to worry, you know, sometimes, you know, these things happen." And he let it go, and he just sent me on my way. But when I was talking to the other brothers, and the other priests that were there, they told me that was an old priest, and he had passed 5 years on,
right,
and he was part of the community. And he had passed, and I couldn't understand. I was like, you know, what do you mean he had passed? He's gone to heaven. How come he's there? You know, I had no comprehension of what this was all about, and why was I seeing this person that was supposedly nobody else could see? So, I kept things very quiet, you know.
Yeah. Now, apparently, when you were still quite young, you started your interest in martial arts. Now, I believe, and I'm sure you do, that nothing in life that takes an important place in it happens by chance. Now, you went on to great heights, I guess, as far as the martial arts were concerned. Would you like to just paint a picture of your background in that side?
Yeah, I mean, when I was young, I actually got bullied because of my spiritual beliefs. And I got bullied for being spiritual. So, and I was always interested in martial arts, and I had watched things in the movies, and I had watched, you know, Jackie Chan and the Drunken Master. I had watched all these Chinese kung fu movies. And I wanted to have a go myself because I wanted to look after myself.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't, I didn't have many friends, and I wasn't really accepted because I was a bit strange to them, if you like, you know.
Oh yeah.
So I actually started studying Shotokan karate, and I didn't like that. It was to me, it just didn't seem to be the right thing. And then I went to another martial art called Nanbudo, and I thought that was quite boring because all we seemed to do was run about daft and not actually do anything.
Right.
And then I went on to judo, and I studied judo for a little while, and I did quite well in judo. And I started getting an interest. But at that time, in the 1980s, there was the ninja boom, you know. Everybody wanted to be a ninja, and
there was these,
you know, the films were coming out, you know, the American Ninja and all that kind of stuff.
That's right, yes.
And I got kind of hooked by that kind of idea, and I found out that there was actually one class that was running in Lark Hall in Scotland, and it was one of the only places in the whole of Scotland that was training at the time.
Yeah.
And I went there as a young lad, and the guy wouldn't take me on. He just wasn't interested. I was too young at the time, and he only really trained people from like 16 upwards, and I was 10 years old. So instead of going to church on Sunday, I used to tell my mother, I'm going to church, I don't want to go to church with you in the morning. My father was Protestant, actually. My mother was staunch Catholic. So it was a bit of a mixture there, you know.
Yes.
And my dad would say, oh, you know, kind of let him be and let him go on his own to church. And so eventually convinced my mother. And then I went to, instead of going to church, I got the number one bus to Lark Hall and went to the ninjutsu class. And eventually I annoyed the instructor so much that he had to let me in.
Yeah.
And that was it. I was hooked from then on. And I then started to discover that there were spiritual parallels within the art to things that I believed in, you know, because even being brought up a Catholic, through my experiences with paranormal phenomena, I knew there was more to this than met the eye.
Yeah.
And I studied scripture, and I studied things that I probably shouldn't have studied as a young man, as a young boy. While people were reading, you know, comic books and playing football, I was studying spiritual matters, and I had done this ever since I was about 10.
Right. So, tell us, what is the objective of ninjutsu?
Well, ninjutsu is not just a martial art. Ninjutsu is a way of life, Mike. It blends all aspects of mind, body, and spirit. And whereas I would like to term it is, some people understand the martial arts as a combat thing, and a lot of people want to learn to fight, and they want to learn to learn how to hit someone really quick or kick really high or use weapons. Whereas in ninjutsu, you don't. That's only just a tiny little part of it. You actually learn to live, and you learn to love nature as the universe intended, and to understand the spiritual qualities of nature. And the way I like to use an analogy is, if you're a martial artist and you study another art, a combatant art, you will see a flower and you will look at the flower, Mike, and you'll think, now isn't that a pretty flower? It's got nice red petals, it's got a nice stem, it's got lovely leaves. But that's as far as you see it. You see it, what you perceive with your eye. Now, with the ninjutsu practitioner, and I want to say not just ninjutsu, but with the Budo practitioner, understanding Budo, you look at the flower and you say this. Now, that's a beautiful flower. Imagine, look at the colour. Look at the energy that's coming through that colour. Look at the stem. Look how strong it is. Look what gives birth to the leaves. Look at the aura surrounding the colour. Look at the aura surrounding the plant. Imagine how much energy from Mother and Nature that took to propagate the seed, to grow strong, to find its way from the earth, to come from the earth, and to eventually move its way upwards. Yeah. And that's just like our spiritual journey, and that's ninjutsu.
Yeah, that's a wonderful concept. I gather a bit later, possibly after you became a little bit more adept in those skills, while you were still at school, you did have an incident that happened which made you angry, and you went to the help of a girl who was being harassed by other boys.
Yeah, I did. There was I got bullied quite a bit in school because I sang as well in school, and I was singing with a girl. I was doing a duet with a girl called Amanda Hughes, and God rest her soul. She passed really early in life, and I'm actually now a trained opera singer now, and but at those times, you know, you kind of got bullied a bit and pushed about a bit, and I took that for a while. But I never liked bullies bullying ladies or bullying girls. I just couldn't stand it. And while we were set outside the music room waiting to go in, a couple of these boys, you know, these guys had come up and they were pushing the girl around and trying to take her dinner money off her. And it wasn't fair. And, you know, and I stuck my neck out and kind of jumped into it and tried to stop them. And then they turned on me and they started pushing me around. And I couldn't take it anymore. And that was the very first time that I'd ever used the training that I had received within the dojo to protect myself and to protect other people.
Yeah.
And he got a shock, and he never bullied me ever again.
That. Yeah. I bet they never bothered you again, did they?
No, they never bothered me again. No, not at all. They didn't.
No. Okay. Oh, that's an interesting little story, that. Anyway, moving on a bit, quite a bit actually, you left the army in 1995 and became a personal bodyguard, and I'll just tell our listeners that you later worked as an international security consultant, but this is the point we're coming to, isn't it, that you used your sixth sense to quell incidents by preempting them or by knowing the outcome. Now, tell us how you arrived at that sort of state that you were able to do that.
Well, I mean, I had obviously had many, many years of studying of ninjutsu and the martial arts, so I had developed a more understanding of energy, and through my training, I was able to enhance this energy and utilize it. So I found myself, when I worked as a bodyguard, I did undercover work, actually, and some undercover work that I did was exceptionally dangerous, and I worked with the law enforcement and police units. And on one particular occasion, I was to meet very high-level criminals. I had to infiltrate an organization. And these people had actually set up a kidnap. They were going to kidnap me, take me away and shoot me and kill me.
Yeah.
And I remember on that day, I didn't feel good. There was like this heavy energy around me, and I couldn't get to grips with what it was. And every time I tried to do something that was making me move forward to the job I was supposed to do, something would stop me. And my radio wouldn't work. Things wouldn't happen. The car broke down. And then I'd sat in the car and I was thinking, what is going on? I was really kind of panicking. I'm thinking, I felt really bad. And immediately I had these visions, these kind of psychic preempting warnings of something that was going to happen. And I saw myself being kidnapped, thrown into the back of a van and taken away. So I decided on that I wouldn't pursue it any further. And I didn't go and do the job I was supposed to do, much to the chagrin of some of my superiors. Yeah. And I explained the situation. I said, I can't, there's something that was feeling heavy. And one of my, what we called oppos, one of the guys that I was working with at the time in the unit, had said to me, you were lucky, because if you had gone there, you were, they had already, we got intelligence in too late. They were going to set you up and yeah. take you away. So that was just yeah. one particular case that I used it on. And many other times, I mean, later on in life, when I came out of doing bodyguard work and undercover work, I got divorced from my previous wife, and I went to live in Aberdeenshire, and I had nothing to do. So I was studying more of my martial arts and more of my kind of spiritual side of life, and I went to work as a doorman on the door to see what that side of life was. Yeah. And my intuition was even stronger then. I could, you know, I could pick up lots of different things on people, you know. I could know who was going to cause trouble, who was carrying things that they shouldn't have been carrying, who was possibly carrying drugs. So I was using my intuition all the time, and I managed to evacuate a building and stop a terrible disaster from happening. And I managed to stop 3 fatal stabbings just by recognizing the subtle signs that were around me.
Yeah.
So there's been a number of times in my life where I've utilized that intuition.
What about the occasion when you were confronted by someone who would be described as a dangerous person who was suffering a deep depression because his father had passed away and he seemed to pick on you?
Well, that's true, yeah, and that part of the book, I mean, that was quite strange because I was developing as a medium then, and I could pick up that, and I could actually communicate. I knew that he had lost someone in spirit, and by me being able to curtail that and to understand that he had done that, I was able to kind of tune into his own vibration and recognize that his anger was coming through loss. And lost from his father, so I calmed him down by talking to him and speaking to him and getting to the root of it without actually frightening him and saying, I know your father's passed, and, you know, I can understand that, because you can't always do that. You know, you're not allowed to just, you shouldn't just walk up to someone and say, if you're a medium, and start to give information, because that's just not the way it should be done. I was able to get down to the nitty-gritty, you know, the root of the matter, the root of the problem, which then, you know, I had a young man that opened up, and there was no longer any violence there. He didn't want to do anything, you know, and it dissipated, and, you know, he went on and did his thing, and things were okay.
That was a good outcome. Now, the $64 question really here is, you developed your sixth sense, and evidently your book is one that you feel will help other people. Is there any simple way in describing how we can apply ourselves to develop it?
The first thing I would say is learn to meditate. And that doesn't necessarily mean sitting in a room in the quiet or with music on, or even sitting in a meditation room cross-legged and humming anything. I tend to teach my students that there's many, many ways that we can meditate that we don't think of. We can even take 5-10 minutes a day and get a lot more out of that quiet time than we would normally. And you can meditate even by reading a book, because you're going into the silence and your mind is still. And when your mind is still and you're reading something that you're enjoying, then you can actually receive psychic impressions, or you can receive impressions from spirit. Second way that I teach my students who have never done meditation before, I give them an essay to do. I say to them, for instance, if I'm talking about an element in nature, perhaps earth or perhaps fire or water, I will say, take that element, go away and think about it, put a little bit of music on, and write me an essay, and it doesn't have to be long. And what happens is those students normally go away, they go into the quiet, they think about what I've asked them, and then they start to put their thoughts down in paper. Now, that is them beginning to learn the rudimentary elements of meditation. So it can be done in a very easy way, and sometimes even if I go out jogging, I meditate when I'm jogging. So we don't have to necessarily sit around in quiet. Now, I would say to anyone, though, anyone who wants to develop mediumship has to sit in a proper meditation circle or a proper development circle under the guidance of a professional, and not try and do it themselves. And that's a completely different kettle of fish.
Yes. Now, I assume that if you come into a situation where you're trying to sense intuitively what's happening, you have to somehow from within you project some sort of energy. How do you condition yourself to make it work, shall we say?
Well, you don't necessarily have to condition yourself to make it work, because let me take a simple example of someone walking into a bar and the hairs on their back standing on end. That is the first sign of your intuitive nature kicking in. And normally this is coming from one of our psychic centers, one of our, or as we would understand it, Mike, is our chakras, you know?
Yeah.
And for those of people that are listening that don't understand what the chakras are, they're energy centers, they're vortices that have been known for thousands and thousands of years, for a millennia, that contain all the information that we have and contain our access to the spirit realms. Now, we can actually receive that impulse, and you can walk into a building and start to feel a bit, you know, I don't like this. Well, that is your intuition beginning to work. So all you need to do is learn to enhance that and listen to it a little bit more, and it would save your life. Now, one particular girl that was on a course, I did a course for Marathon Oil, and the woman who was on the course said to me that, it was after the course actually, she had wrote to me and she'd said that she was going to go through a park in Aberdeenshire, and as she approached the gates of the park, she had this terrible overwhelming feeling and the hairs on her neck stood on end, and then she started to get a kind of fear building up in her, and a bit of an image that was building up in her clairvoyant mind, and she decided not to go through the park, and she went another way, and she stayed alive. Now, a lot of people will say, well, anybody can say that. But in the newspapers the next day, in the Press and Journal, it was another young woman just shortly after the time that student had got there, had gone through the park and was seriously raped and was put in hospital. So one woman listened to her intuition and the second woman didn't, and she was raped. So that's a very simple example about how we can use and we can develop that.
But what about when you're in perhaps a sudden unexpected situation and your body instinct doesn't know whether to stay and fight or run like mad?
What we're talking about there, Mike, is the fight or flight syndrome that people know about, which is the adrenaline dump. And when norepinephrine gets released from the sinoatrial node in the heart, it creates the speeding up of the heart, and then we create adrenaline, and the adrenaline can make us fight or flight or fear. Now, what we need to learn to do is learn to control our breathing when you start to recognize the first signs of it, is to control your breathing, because when we control, everything exists on the breath. And we can see that in ancient Buddhist scripts, in Hindu scripts, in all religions of the world, in all New Age areas as well, and all ancient tribes from thousands of years ago. The breath is the breath of life, and we even see that in the Bible when they talk about the breath of life and the breath of God. So by understanding what exactly the breath is, and by learning to control our breath through rhythmically breathing, we are able to calm that physical manifestation of fear down. And once we do that, Mike, then we are able to remain calm and to be able to accept the energy that comes to us, and we can make a better decision within a split second. That's all it takes. So by learning to understand what the fight or flight is, we can also enhance our intuitive nature that way.
How do we treat, warnings that might come in our dream state? Would we take them as being of value, or just some sort of silly nonsense that you sometimes get?
Well, I think what happens is through meditation and through developing a better spiritual connection with your guides and your angels, you are able to have the power of discernment, Mike, and I'm sure you will agree that over a period of time, moving into that spiritual side of things, you're able to discern between a nonsense dream coming from your conscious thoughts to a precognitive dream coming from your superconsciousness.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key element, is to understand that. And one amazing man who's done so, and he's a friend of mine actually, the gentleman that wrote the foreword for my book, Dale Graff, who was the executive director of Project Stargate for the CIA.
Yeah.
He deals with precognition all the time and dealing with this dream state and within remote viewing. And I think we need to identify, we need to learn to identify, and that only takes time, Mike. We need to identify between our conscious and our superconscious thoughts. Now, a precognitive dream will have a storyline to it, and it will mean something. And when you come out of that dream, you will kind of 75-80% recognize and know that it is precognitive because of the type of situation, or because of what's happened in the dream, or the way the story unfolds. Whereas a nonsense dream will be something that you might not even remember, and you'll never make sense of it.
No.
Most precognitive dreams, 90% of people make sense of the dream.
Yes. You mentioned remote viewing there. Is that something you've ever tried or can do?
Yes, I enjoy it. And my wife and I, Joanne, who's also an author and a medium, we have lots of fun doing these games, and sometimes we teach our students to do them, and we actually kind of disappear for a while and go somewhere, and then the other person will take the time and tune in and try and get some information. And also you can do it with family and friends, and you can build it up that way before you attempt to do anything properly. I mean, we've done remote viewing in missing person cases, and we've helped in a number of cases like that.
Do you find you have a reasonable degree of success when you're doing that sort of work?
I think it's very hard for a psychic medium to say yes, we're very successful, because that comes a great deal of ego. But I would say that we have had some success, whereas it's very difficult for someone to do it to the extent and say, the missing person is at this place, and this is where they are, because if that was the case, we would all be doing it for MI5, MI6, and CIA.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think we can, I think with remote viewing, what we do is we give extra information, we give a new angle to search and locate, we give possible clues. And that's all we can do. And we have had some success with giving clues. And one of the things that I'd like to state is that whilst myself and Joanne do that for law enforcement and for other people, we don't publicize it. We don't do what other so-called, other mediums and psychics do and publicize it to make themselves famous. We keep it very quiet. And the reason I like to do that is because I've had a background with high-level security and intelligence, and I know that by keeping quiet and keeping things personal causes a lot less problems than coming out and trying to, make yourself look good for it.
Yeah. You were called in to investigate a crime, which is called the Rennie McRae murder. Was that an instance where you used your remote viewing to try and get some clues?
Actually, with that, my wife and I both did that, and that was, we had precognitive dreams, and we went into meditation, and we communicated with spirit on that one, and we did remote view the incident in question to try and get some information, and this was a cold case that was done, it was 30 years ago, and the newspapers that actually reported it actually tested us. They actually tested us out because they did a a newspaper report up here in the Highlands because it was a. They had found out about us when we came back from America, and they asked us. I mean, it was kind of done as a scientific test, really, and they had said that they had had hundreds of psychics and people that come in and douse us, and they had actually stated in the report that we were the closest that ever came to the real information, and we also confirmed that with members of the police force here.
Yes. Now, you using your sixth sense still, presumably, you've spoken in your book about using it to protect your home or your business. Now, how do you actually apply it to something of that nature?
Right, well, let's take an example. I'll give you an example of a businessman that came to see me.
Yes.
And the minute I spoke to the businessman, I said, I have a feeling there's someone in your office is going to be stealing your trade secrets. They're actually having an affair now with a member of staff. And he laughed at me. All right? And I said, I'm telling you, this is coming from my vibes, from my intuition, and there's something wrong. And he just laughed at me in my face. And 3 weeks later, there was a phone call saying, you need to help us. Something's gone wrong. X person and Y person has left the company and stolen all the trade secrets and the software from the actual organization. But now this businessman, he was very embarrassed because he knew he didn't want to let his boss know. He got his boss to try and give me a call, and he didn't want to kind of come out with it to his boss in case he said that he believed in psychics and mediums and that he was forewarned and he could have told the boss all about it, and he was frightened that he was going to get sacked for already knowing the information.
Oh,
so he never actually took it forward to do anything, but I did help them kind of deal with it. So that's one way that we can protect our businesses. Now, if he had been more in tune with his intuition, he could have possibly sensed that. He could have sensed the vibes from the other people.
Yeah.
He could have sensed that. He could have known that there was something wrong and perhaps led them to another avenue of inquiry, which would have saved a lot of the hassle within the business and, you know, with these people stealing the trade secrets.
Right.
And as far as our houses and things go, I mean, another thing was years ago, I had actually taken a friend of mine's daughter home, and she had a young baby. And as I was approaching the house, I felt that someone was in the home, and I told them, you know, stay in the car because I think someone's in the home. There was no movement, you couldn't see nothing.
Yeah.
And as I went straight in through the door, there was two robbers that were just running out the back entrance that had broken in from the back of the house.
Yeah.
Now, that could have been that young lady and the little girl going into the house on their own and not being in tune with the energy that was surrounding the whole situation and could have perhaps walked into a very dangerous situation.
Yes,
so that's another case in question that we could put forward for utilising that. And there's many other people that have used their intuition now. Everybody in the UK, I'm sure, has heard of Dr. William Bloom.
Yes.
He actually had an intuitive vision about the tsunami disaster before it happened. And he had booked a holiday to go to Asia to where the tsunami hit. Now, he had really bad vibes, and he said to me, when I was talking to him, and he said to me, Jock, you know, I really felt strong something was going to happen. And I said to my wife, I don't like this. I don't think we should go. Something's wrong. I don't know if it's the plane or if it's something else. But he had this deep yearning inside not to go. So he cancelled the holiday. He lost about £1,500, and 2 days later, the tsunami hit.
Yeah.
So he had saved, you know, his family's life.
Absolutely, yes.
And we can all do this, Mike. You know, it's not just for what everybody says, that, you know, specially gifted people, because every single person in the world is a divine spark of God, the divine spark of the Great Spirit. And we all have this ability. It's nothing new. You know, we just need to remember that we are spirit in human form and not human in spirit form.
Yeah, it's a matter of being aware that you have that ability, isn't it, and developing it and taking notice of it.
Exactly, and I think you need to take notice. And I mean, you can take notice around you each day. For instance, you know, you may get up in the morning, open the newspaper and see a sign that says stop, you know, and then you put on the news and you see something else that tells you, you know, perhaps there's been an accident somewhere. And then maybe you hear a song on the radio and it's got the same kind of connotation with it. That, you know, notice them subtle little nuances around you and make a decision, and, you know, it could save your life.
Yes, indeed. Now, Jock, because we started a bit late, we've only got a limited amount of time left, and before the programme ends at 5 minutes to the hour, I need to announce my guests next week. Would you like to tell our listeners how they can obtain your book and give you perhaps your website details or any other information?
Certainly, yes. They can go to any bookshop in the UK or around the world and ask for Powers of the Sixth Sense, How to Remain Safe in a Hostile World by Jock Brokers. Or they can go to my website, which is www.jockbrokers.com, and get the information there. Or, of course, they can go onto Amazon and they can order it from Amazon or any online bookstore. The book has actually been doing really well. It's changing a lot of people's ideas on things, and a major TV network in the US has now picked it up to turn it into a TV show to help people. That's all very hush-hush at the moment, and we're looking forward to seeing how things develop. And I must also say that my book would never have came about if I hadn't been from the support of my wife and, being there all the way and helping, you know, making me the medium that I am today.
That's great. I think we all need support in these type of ventures. Any final message that you might have regarding...
The final message I would say is to look around you, to look not only with your eyes, but to look with your spirit.
Yeah.
And to see the beauty in nature and the beauty of everything around you, and to learn to understand energy as it is. Because if you understand energy and you learn to meditate, even if it's a small amount per day, it might just save your life. And remember that psychic ability is not just about reading the future, the past, or the present. And mediumship, we can even have warnings from our loved ones in spirit as to potential disasters. So recognize that we're all spirit in human form, and make this world a safer place.
Indeed, yeah, that's a very nice thought. Well, I've just about come to my last couple of minutes, Jock, which will give me time to say thank you very much for coming onto the programme. I get booked up fairly well in advance, but we obviously must have you back again in due course. I'll be in touch with you. I hope you'll
love to come back. Love to.
Success, because I know it was only launched recently, wasn't it?
It was only launched recently. It's only been out about a month and a half. And it's doing very well. It's already had rights sold in India, and it's other countries are interested in it now as well. And it's doing great, you know. And we need, you know, more people that get it and buy it, then the more lives it's going to change. And to be honest, if it changes one person's life, it's done its job.
That's great. Yeah. Well, it's certainly a book with a difference. And I thank you very much for a very interesting interview. So I'll leave you now, Jock, and just tell my listeners that my guest next week will be Amy Williamson. Don't know too much about her, but apparently she's very interested in the paranormal. She does teach people how to become a paranormal investigator. She's been involved herself with investigating haunting and things of that nature. She also teaches, incidentally, how to communicate with spirits. So that sounds, again, like a very interesting program coming up. So thank you for being with me. Hope you'll be with
thank
me
Thank you,
next
mate.
Week.
Look forward to coming back.
Yes, thank you. God bless you all.
God bless.